Mini-episode 1767 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by Sportsology, delivering unconventional columns and webcasts about sports, TV, music, movies, and more. Follow them on the web at Sportsology.com.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late-night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to FDH Lounge Mini Episode 1767. This is FDH Managing Partner Rick Morris coming at you here today. And we have with us our great friend, FDH Lounge dignitary, Steve Callis, he of the Callis Remarks podcast, with our other friend and fellow FDH Lounge dignitary, Joe Stazak. Also, Steve being the sports editor of the Westchester County Post, westchestercountypost.com. Always a pleasure to have Steve on to talk about any different types of sports, but today it's baseball. And literally, because of the incompetence of MLB, basically ending the regular season mere hours before the playoffs start, we're getting in right as the last game ended. So we're going live to tape not long after the dust settled in Atlanta. And so we will be taking a look at that. There was some other huge breaking news that I think is going to loom over the baseball world for quite some time to come here that just came across the wire. All that and much, much more with our great friend, Steve Callis. Steve, great to have you on as always, buddy.
Great to be with you, Rick, especially when it's baseball playoff time. I can't wait for that, but you're right. It was kind of a crazy day today with the Mets and Braves playing, too. And I don't know if I feel bad for the Diamondbacks, but what chance did they have other than a split in today's, which would keep them out of the playoffs? They apparently had a watch thing in Arizona. And, of course, how could they be happy in the first game? And then they had to be worried, hoping the Mets could somehow pull out the second. And, of course, hey, look, they started the guy Lucchese, who hardly pitches, but he pitched out of his mind, held them to one run in six innings, I think.
Yeah.
But you know the drill. The Braves won. The Braves have the tiebreaker, I believe. Yeah, so the Braves are five, playing the Padres, and the Mets are six, playing the Brewers. But I agree with you. So, well, we'll see what happens. I know we're going to talk about it. If these teams with the best records, who literally will not play 5 or 6 days now, counting today, Sunday the season ended, if they get knocked out again like they got the teams with 100-plus wins last year got knocked out, I think you have to change this back to the old one game after 162. I didn't used to like that, but you know what I think of wild cards in general, baseball being the last major sport to go to wild cards. But now, it just bothers me, wild cards, you get in, your record's not that great, you win the World Series, or it just leaves a bad taste in my mouth. I'm an old-timer, as you know, but I could go for one team wins the pennant or the old two-division thing. I understand there's so many teams now you need more, but this many more, I don't know, Rick. I don't quite buy 12 teams in the playoffs. That kind of kills me.
Well, I tell you what, we are going to, I think you heard it here first, the NHL/NBAification of this, because, Steve, the first rule,
yes.
The first rule in any sport is they never give anything back. So it won't be a matter of giving anything back. It'll be a matter of expanding, and nobody's on a bye. 1 versus 8, 2 versus 7, etc. That's what it's going to be, rather than going to any type of other thing. It'll be the excuse for further expansion, further, as guys like me and you would correctly say, dilution.
You're totally right. I don't even know what to say. I find it disappointing. Is it football this year that put in another wild card, and the basketball 7-10 thing is the dumbest thing I've ever heard, but you got a team in 13th place out of 15 or whatever it is.
Yeah.
Oh, we're 500, but if we can just win 3 more games, we make the playoffs. And that's why they don't call it the playoffs, because it's so embarrassing, right? It's
right.
The play-in, but
yes.
But that's just semantics. It's the playoffs, and to be 10th place and be in the playoffs is disgusting to me, but I digress. We've talked about this for years now.
Yeah, there is that, and then I also want to hit the incompetence of MLB for having it go to the doubleheader today as we're doing this live to tape. in terms of, again, the hurricanes come with plenty of warning. And again, they could have gotten this in before the series. They could have arranged for this to have not been the impediment that it was here. To everybody trying to plan for everything. You've got the Braves having to fly across the country to San Diego tomorrow after playing a doubleheader, which is an embarrassment. The Mets have to go to Milwaukee. This is one of these things where everybody always said, oh, Bud Selig's the worst commissioner baseball ever had. Rob Manfred turns around and says, hold my beer.
It's beyond stupid. The only thing I can possibly think of, and I don't know if you have to do this, you're the commissioner, you probably don't, as Atlanta, if you were going to say play it somewhere else Wednesday, Thursday, which could have easily been done, Atlanta would might have said, nah, it's our home games, we want to play at home. Maybe. I don't know, Rick. But that was the only thing I could remotely come up with that would make it possible to justify that. But I agree totally. They should have played it Wednesday, Thursday, somewhere.
Somewhere. And again, the integrity of the game. This is what it comes down to, is that this has happened in other sports. It's happened in the NFL when there's been weather issues. I know that Pontiac has been, or not Pontiac, I guess now it's Detroit where they have Ford Field now. But I guess I'm showing my age by referring to the Silver Dome. But that is, you know, they've moved games there because of, I think it might have been a Browns game one of these years that got moved there. I don't remember. But this is just one of these deals that happens, and you have to account for this today with, you know, extreme weather events. There's always the possibility of something like this happening. I want to say also, too, that I had alluded to it at the top here, and this is definitely something worthy of its own segment at some point, and I can't see doing such a segment without you because you're so knowledgeable on all of this, but the passing of Pete Rose, finding this out, you told me this right before we started taping, and I think that we're both still in some shock here. I mean, on the same day as Dikembe Mutombo, who had, unfortunately and sadly, the brain cancer that nobody knew that he had. There had been rumors that he was having health problems. I said to you off air, like, Pete Rose just generally didn't look great the last couple times I saw him on TV. But, again, a lot of controversy that will always follow the man around. And gambling in some ways is almost kind of the least of it. There's some other stuff as well that's been alluded to over the years. But undeniably, one of the great characters in the history of baseball, and a sad day when anybody of that ilk passes away.
Yeah, well, I'll just say this about that, and it's every commissioner since Bart Giamatti, who died 9 days after Pete Rose was suspended for life, which back then, as you know, meant you could apply for reinstatement after a year. But they asked Bart Giamatti, who everybody was trying to protect. Faye Vincent was like his best friend. He was the next commissioner. But they asked Bart Giamatti that day, when they both had press conferences, Rose and Giamatti had separate press conferences, and the baseball writers asked Giamatti, so what does this have to do? Does this stop Pete Rose from getting into the Hall of Fame? And Giamatti, and there's a quote in that Costa Kennedy very good book about Pete Rose. I think it's called An American Dilemma. Page 229 for the footnote. That's how much this bothers me, Rick. But Giamatti pointed, when asked that, he pointed to all the writers who were there and says, this has nothing to do with the Hall of Fame. It's up to you, the writers, to vote Pete Rose into the Hall of Fame or not. And that got lost in the shuffle through the next how many commissioners. Bud Selig left it on his desk for 18 years. And it's just very disgusting. And as we were talking about it, Ron Santo is a guy who was a great Cub, probably a Hall of Famer, and eventually got in. But I think his legs were amputated. He was still calling games. Every year people were saying, you got to put this guy in. And he died, and they put him in 2 years later. And we talked about that off the air, about how many times this happens to people. And it may happen to Pete Rose, but the stupidity of the rule, I'll say it forever, to me, if you bet on your team to win, isn't that different from if you bet on your team to lose? And if you bet on your team to lose, you know, get the key, lock the door, throw it away forever. I agree with that. If you bet on your team to win, which is always ever proven that Pete Rose did, I understand the argument, oh, the pitching, who knows what he would have done, blah, blah, blah. But I wrote for years, after 10 years, after 20 years, after 89, 99, 09, 30 years, 2019. I said, how many years do you have to be punished for betting on your team to win? If you bet on your team to lose, lifetime ban, 100%. But if you bet on your team to win, how about 10 years? How about 20 years?
Yeah.
How about 30 years? And here we are now, literally, at like 35 years before they passed that rule, called the Pete Rose rule, where I come from, by the way.
Yeah.
Because it not only screwed Pete Rose, as you know, it screwed Shoeless Joe Jackson, which is another conversation for another time.
Well, and I will just say this, just from the very bitter point of view that I have, because this is one of the things I hate the most. And if I was ever to run down anybody with my car, it might be sports writers that are responsible for this phenomenon that I'm about to get into. And that's the whole thing of not giving people their flowers while they're here. Pete Rose probably unwittingly unlocked the way to get into the Hall of Fame by dying, because this is what we do. We spit on people when they're alive. That's a thing where I'd said to you previously that, you know, some examples of this. Gene Hickerson with the Browns, great Hall of Fame guard. They wait till he's got dementia and he's in a wheelchair and he dies the next year. Oh, it's time to put him in the Hall of Fame. And just there are countless examples of this. And, you know, it makes me sick to my stomach that we don't do this, because you're either deserving or you're not deserving. And this whole pity thing after somebody passes away and you realize that you should have done it then. Well, hey, it's too late to do it when they could be here to enjoy it. This is just a sick thing that just keeps repeating itself over and over and over again.
I agree. A sad state of affairs that could be overcome with common sense, something that is less and less, it seems, on many issues, but including that kind of stuff, putting guys in the Hall of Fame.
Yes.
After they die, or really, they may not even know where they are when they get in. Like, that's good. That's not good either.
Yeah, I mean, it's ridiculous. And again, baseball's been guilty of that in many different instances. And again, man, give people their flowers when they're here. It's a very simple precept, but it's one that we absolutely ought to honor. And so as we go to take a look at this, with the baseball lineup for the postseason here, I will start with the area where we've had a little bit more time to contemplate on this. An entire 24 hours. What a luxury. Thank you, MLB. Thank you for giving us 24 hours to look at the American League playoff things. This is what sucks. Not just as a content creator who's trying to get something out on the market in a timely fashion, but as a fan. This is ridiculous. And this is where, again, I think they are going to do away with the buys altogether, because the only justification they can have for starting this thing tomorrow when they had games today is that, oh, you don't want to make those teams wait even longer. So that's where I kind of agree with you. I think that system may be on borrowed time. But the way I'm going to do this is I'm going to run through the first couple of rounds in each league, and then later on we can take it Championship Series and World Series. Looking at the wild card round in the American League, one of the things that I was struck by, I told you that I just kind of, just as a spitballing kind of exercise here, just kind of ranked the teams on a scale of 1 to 5, what would I give, you know, for the hitting and for the pitching? Like for the Yankees, for example, I've got 3.5 for both of those. So, you know, pretty good, above average, whatever. The Yankees have great offensive numbers as a team, but it comes from a very, very top-heavy lineup. And I look at the lineups in the American League, and it's one of these things where I'm reminded of this because my old colleague from WOUB Radio in Athens, my friend Dan McDowell, that does the great show, The Dumb Zone, sometimes they use this sound drop. This is a great sound drop that they use. Have you ever watched the movie Office Space, Steve?
Sure.
Okay. Yep. All right. So quoting from the two Bobs, all right? When I look at a lot of the lineups in the American League, especially Detroit, Kansas City, and elements of Cleveland's lineup, I'm reminded of one of the two Bobs. And I could look at one of these guys, maybe Rocio from the Tribe or whatever, and say, what would you say you do here? Because I'm just looking at it like there are such holes in some of these American League lineups, such that I'm not seeing on the National League lineups nearly to a degree like that. So I actually see the wild card round in the American League as being a fairly fait accompli kind of a deal. I mean, it's possible you get Scooble come out there and, you know, really kind of Buffalo, Houston, and maybe send it to, a third game potentially. But I've got Houston over Detroit in two, Baltimore over Kansas City in two. I think that those are going to be, and we've seen a lot of series, by the way, the last couple of years that we might have expected to go three games and only went two. So these are ones where I look at particularly the lineup issues with these teams, and I have a hard time seeing it go longer than that. That would bring us to the divisional series, and again, a month ago, I think I might have been tempted, and I think I did pick in my predictions at the time, Baltimore over the Yankees in this series. I'm going to reverse that and say Yankees in five, because I think just some of Baltimore's pitching issues, I think, could end up kind of nagging them. I've got the Yankees just sort of a bit ahead of them pitching-wise. I'm going to say Houston over Cleveland in four. Because quite frankly, Cleveland, much like the Yankees, hasn't matched up well with Houston in the playoffs in past years. And again, top-heavy lineup for the Tribe. I don't see anything that really changes that. The only thing that could change that is, again, for all intents and purposes, you're not beating the Tribe if you're down after six innings. So there is that part. There's the chance, and that's why I have it going to four instead of it being a sweep. It could go to five potentially, but in the end, I see it being the Yankees and Houston in the American League playing for the championship series, something we've seen many times before, something I know, Steve, you as a Yankee fan probably have a lot of PTSD about.
That's correct.
Yeah. Well, how do you see the thing shaping up in the American League up to the point of the championship series?
Well, mine is different, and it might be because of a bit of the Houston factor. To me, they're not quite Houston the way they were.
Agreed.
But they have so much experience. They still have, the core with, Bergman and Altuve. Big question mark, as I'm sure you know, is Alvarez. Is he healthy? He's got that knee.
Yes.
But even then, they have Kyle Tucker. They have Yonier Diaz. I mean, they got a lot of guys. And they're pitching, Framber Valdez, Brown, Kikuchi. This Kikuchi is 2.70. They picked him up at the trade deadline. 2.70 ERA in 10 starts. So I do like Houston to beat Detroit. I can't quite pick the games like you. But I also I do have Baltimore beating Kansas City, but unlike you. And I watched those three games last week when Baltimore played the Yankees. They were at least in theory playing for best record or first place or something, and Baltimore beat the Yankees the first two games rather easily, and the Yankees crushed Baltimore in the third game to clinch everything. I think they had to beat the Pirates one game, and they did. But I've got, believe it or not, I'm staying with Baltimore over the Yankees. Ooh. Everything you said about the pitching is correct. I mean, it's just true.
Yeah.
But they have such a lineup, and they punish the Yankees. The Yankees, to me, I understand you're 3.5 out of 5. I would probably go there as well. But their pitching is so up and down. Their relievers are pitching better now. Their starting pitching, to me, is an up and down. I'm sure you saw the famous, I'll just call him the defending Cy Young Award winner.
Yes.
Actually putting up, I've never seen a pitcher put up four fingers and wave the guy to first, like, get out of the box. I'm not pitching to you.
Yeah.
You remember the game, right, a couple of weeks ago against the Red Sox, Garrett Cole.
Right.
And he was literally pitching a no-hitter. I think it was only like the fourth inning, so I don't want to go crazy. But he was literally pitching a no-hitter when he put his four fingers up on the mound and waved the guy. Again, I've never seen that. Waved Devers to first. And then they proceeded to score three runs in that inning and four runs in the next inning, and the game was over. I'm not saying it's related. I just thought it was so weird. You're the defending Cy Young. Now, Devers owns, I don't know if you saw the numbers. Two innings, maybe the next inning or two innings later, Devers got up with the bases loaded, so they couldn't walk him, and he hit a long single to right center that drove in two more runs.
Right.
After he was walked, which started the rally.
Right.
So, Cole, is he an excellent pitcher? Absolutely. Is he up and down? Well, anybody you name is up and down. Have they been pitching better? Yes. But as you pointed out, they have a top-heavy lineup. When I'm watching Yankee games, I don't really have a lot of time, or I'm just getting home. I just want to see Soto and Judge get up. Now, Stanton, 25 or 26 homers, whatever he finished at. To me, he's always been a mistake hitter. You make a mistake. He's not a real good hitter like Judge is, who I think hit like 320 this year. I mean, he's been unbelievable, and the stuff he's done is unbelievable. I know they were talking about, there was actually a New York sports writer, don't remember his name, who was saying it's actually a battle between Judge and Witt Jr. for the MVP. And while the Royals did make they got in on the last day, I think, right? While the Royals did make the playoffs, and Witt had a great year, what Judge has done, 58 homers and 144 RBIs. I don't think anyone had 140 RBIs for like the last 20 years or something.
Right.
And he led in so many things. I mean, it was just scary. He had a chance for the Triple Crown, but couldn't get it because of Bobby Witt. Just like, by the way, Ohtani had a chance for the Triple Crown, but you know the guy, Ayaz, is that his guy? He won a batting title with the Marlins.
That's right,
yeah. He won the batting title this year. So It's interesting, although I pointed out, and I think you'd agree with this, they'll never change what the Triple Crown is, but then I looked at Bobby Witt Jr.'s on-base percentage, and I looked at Judge's, and Judge had, you know, like Babe Ruth, Ted Williams, like 480 or something.
Right.
And I think maybe Witt had in the 390s, maybe 400 even. We've always said, even when I was a kid, my old man said, just get on base, you're a table setter. You know, on base percentage has always been big. It's just never been recognized with the importance, along with other analytics, that it's been recognized with lately. But you'd much rather have the 320 hitter who's 450 or 460 on base than the 330 or 340 hitter who's 390 or 400. I mean, that's intro to baseball long before there were there were any algorithms or any of that. I do have the Guardians. I will talk to you. I know I'm talking to the expert on that, but I'll give you my reasons for the Guardians to beat the Astros this time, and I know the history, you're totally right. But, you know, they got a lot of question marks coming in, but they're question marks who have had very, very small but very positive recently. You know, Matthew Boyd, 8 starts, 7 of them he gave up 2 earned runs or less. Here's Alex Cobb. You know what happened to him. He's only got 3 starts. But Alex Cobb, I believe he had some pretty good experience with the Rays in the playoffs years ago, and I understand, again, it's years ago. But he's 2-1 with a 2.76 ERA, his only 3 starts, and he hasn't pitched since September 1st. He's got that blister, which I'm sure you know about. But apparently he pitched a simulated game, and he's okay. And on September 1st, it's his last outing, I understand. But he shut out the Pirates for 6 innings. I understand it's the Pirates, although they were for a while kind of in the mix. So, yes, are those guys question marks? Yes. But as you also pointed out, they've got the best bullpen by 10 miles.
Yes.
You know what their ERA was in September, the bullpen ERA, Rick? 1.38.
Yeah.
The entire bullpen.
Incredible.
In September. The Emmanuel Class A guy is Class A, right? Is that
yep.
how
yep.
I hope?
Yep.
He's the best reliever in baseball, period.
By far,
but, I read an article, I think it was by Jeff Passan, the ESPN guy. And the way he wrote it was interesting. He wrote, Emmanuel Class A didn't give up an earned run in September, and neither did Eli Morgan, Eric Sabrowski, or Andrew Walters.
Yeah.
And the 3 other guys they have, all of whom you know, Gattis, Heron, and Cade Smith, they all had an ERA under 2. So you're right. If the Indians get to the 6th inning with a lead, and maybe you'd argue to the 5th inning with a lead, because they do have a legit 6 or 7 guys.
Right.
And nobody else is like that. I understand the problem lineup-wise, and again, is the starting pitching thin? Absolutely. You're praying these guys get 5 or 6 innings, but if they do and you're up 2-1 or 2-0, you can argue the game's going to be over, you know, 80% of the time. They're that good. But I saw this Kyle Manzardo. He hit over 300 in September. He's really come along. I understand Stephen Kwan wasn't quite Stephen Kwan. He hits in the 290s and you're bummed out, but he was also 6-for-15 in his last 4 games. Josh Naylor has some pop, 31 homers. You have the eternal Ramirez, right?
Yeah.
I don't know how the guy keeps doing it, but he's like the last of the Mohicans from a few years ago. But I think they can do it, and I think they have a chance to beat the Astros, who, again, are very good. But to me, they're not the Astros of yesterday, and I hate the Astros of yesterday for cheating reasons. But they're just not quite as good, and I think that Cleveland can beat them, and you're going to laugh. But since I'm picking the Orioles to beat the Yankees, because just of what I saw that last week, and yes, Yankees are going to score off the Orioles, but the Orioles are going to score off the Yankees. I don't know if they bet over in baseball games, but if they do, that would be a good series to bet over. But I have, believe it or not, Rick, are you sitting down?
Okay.
I have the Guardians beating the Orioles to make it to the World Series.
Wow. Well, shades of 1997. And again, from your lips to God's ears, I don't necessarily see it, but I will say on a couple of the guys you mentioned there. It's a very good points made on a couple of these guys here. You have the relative freshness of Cobb and of Boyd because they don't have all the innings on them here during the season. So you have fresher, you know, relative to what everybody else has got going into the month of October. There is that at least. If Alex Cobb is a hero for the Tribe this postseason, I will finally stop hearing about it from fellow FDH Lounge dignitary and good friend Bob Glassman, who's like, remember when Alex Cobb pitched that one game and beat us 4-0 in 2013 and knocked us out of the wild card game? By the way, the very same game that led to the end of Chief Wahoo and the Indians organization as a name, because it was on that night that you had a couple of these goofball fans decided to paint up their faces red. The cameras pick it up. It explodes on Twitter. And basically, we're going down the path we went down years later where we threw Chief Wahoo under the bus. So thanks a lot to the idiots on that night who spoiled it for the rest.
I am glad you mentioned Boyd and Cobb, because I didn't mention, and of course you know, Tanner Beebe, you know, 12-8, 3.47 ERA, he takes the ball, and I'm guessing he'll take the ball the first game. But, you know, I think that gives them three guys who can do it. Will they do it? Obviously remains to be seen. But if the blister is gone, the blister is gone, and yep. It's been a month since he's pitched. And again, I think all these guys were pitching sim games so they could be ready to start on the right day. And I think they have their pitching lined up as well. So I think they have a chance. I think the Orioles can beat the Yankees. I think the Orioles won the season series, but they're very, very good. But you are correct. Their starting pitching is not very good. Their relievers are not very good. But these will be slugfests to me, because the Yankees on the wrong day, the Orioles crushed them 2 out of 3.
Well, that's true. Yeah.
So we'll see what happens. And I don't think they're afraid, because now they're young, yes, but they're young with 2 or 3 years of experience. And, you know, I think they can make a run.
I think very possibly, yeah. And I think also, in looking at this here, Stephen Kwan, this is one of these deals where, it's a name you mentioned before, when he was hitting close to 400 early in the season, everybody in Cleveland was like, oh, he's turned into Ichiro. He's turned into the second coming of Ichiro.
That's a tough one.
Well, here's the thing. Is that I always look at it like, again, and me from a fantasy perspective, baseball being the 162-game season, I always look at it this way. There are only a certain number of players, and outside of football, which is too small of a sample size, you could say this for basketball and also for hockey, most players will be somewhere within the range of what you expected. A wide range, yes, but a range of what you expected. What's the most anybody would have expected Kwan to hit this year? The very most, career year, maybe 350? So he's flirting with 400. You know it's not going to last. And it's one of these deals where one of these years, I think it might have been 07, the year where Jorge Posada made it up to 376 at one point, back when the FantasyDraftHelp.com Insider was a standalone show on the Sports Talk Network before we folded it in with the Lounge. I was doing a show that week. I was doing my buy low, sell high, and saying, you want to sell high on Jorge Posada, especially if you are in a rotisserie league with categories. Because not only are you selling high, if you are selling it to, if you're trading him to another team, do you realize what you're going to do to that team's batting average? That's like the old thing about the Germans sending Lenin to Moscow in a boxcar, basically. You will be destroying their batting average by trading a guy who's going to come back to Earth. And Stephen Kwan.
You're right.
yeah. I mean, hey, look, it's not often you can work a World War I analogy into a fantasy baseball, but it happened to fit in the moment, Steve. You know what I mean? So that's what I was thinking of with Kwan earlier this year. Like, it's a long season. Why don't you fans respectfully take a seat here and see what happens? And lo and behold, now part of it is he got hurt. And that was part of it. But, you know, he came back to Earth. But he is still a tremendous player. You know, one of the very best, you know, whether or not they always have him leading off or whatever, leadoff type hitter in the game. Just about the best anyway. So there's a very, very real scenario where it could play out the way that you're looking at. I guess I'm going a little bit more sort of, you know, a conventional kind of a way and expecting it to be Astros-Yankees. I agree with everything you said about Houston is not the Houston that they've been of past years, but it's a thing where I look at it like compared to what? I look at basically the holes of the other teams there. I look at Houston's experience. And that's where it's like, if they were in the National League, I would not be picking them to probably make the championship series, because there's a number of teams in the National League that I think are possibly better than them. I don't think there's anybody in the American League that is. I'm saying Houston over the Yankees in six games to make the World Series. And so you and I disagree on that one. You've got Cleveland, I've got Houston coming out of the American League. In the National League, looking at it, we've had all of about maybe 45 minutes, if we're being kind here, to digest what the first-round matchups are going to be. But in looking at this, I actually think because of, again, I have everything a lot closer in the National League as far as I think the gap between the haves and the have-nots is not as significant as it is in the American League, with the exception of, and this doesn't apply in the wild card round, but the Dodgers pitching. The combination of the Dodgers' health and basically the guys that they've gotten to come back from injury who have not looked like themselves. The Dodgers pitching stands out to me as the great weakness in the National League, where there aren't a lot of weaknesses in these playoffs. But in the first round of the playoffs, believe it or not, I've got Atlanta flying cross-country and taking San Diego to three games. Some of this is going to hinge on the health of Chris Sale, who was not able to go in game 162 today. So that could actually work out well for Atlanta if he ends up pitching in this series. But we don't know as of the time we're recording this whether it'll happen or not. I don't think Chris Sale pitching is the difference between them making it and not making it, because I would say in looking at this, you've got an Atlanta team that a year ago, again, that lineup was like the second coming of the 27 Yankees. And yet with the injuries, with guys that are maybe not at full capacity, that are in there, that are ostensibly healthy. I mean, you don't have Acuna at all, but you've got other guys in there that are banged up or kind of don't look quite like themselves. They may have possibly the worst lineup in the playoffs in the National League this year. Again, they'd be at least middle of the pack in the American League, I think. But compared to these other lineups, I don't think they have enough to get by, but I think they have enough to push San Diego. I've got, in this wild card round, Milwaukee over the Mets in three. I think the Mets can push them to three. I think it'll be a great series, but I've got it being Milwaukee. So going into the second round, San Diego-Philly, this would be a rematch of the 2022, I believe, National League Championship Series. We'll see it in the division round here. And Philly being a team that on paper looks like they could be the best in baseball. And so you can make a case for them to go all the way, but they also benefited from the system the last couple of years. They weren't standing around for a full week waiting for the game to come to them. They were playing all the way through. And I think this may make the difference this time around. And you look at how Philly inexplicably kind of fell apart at the end last year in the National League Championship Series when they should have put away Arizona and couldn't. I've got San Diego over Philly in five. I've got them closing it out in Philly, making it to the League Championship Series. Milwaukee and the Dodgers, I believe they matched up in the National League Championship Series somewhere in the maybe 2017, I'd say, but they meet here in the Divisional Series. I'm saying Milwaukee over the Dodgers in four. Believe it or not, Milwaukee, the better balanced team. I never would have said that at the beginning of the year. But again, Pat Murphy got to be the National League Manager of the Year for the job that he's done here. San Diego, Milwaukee in the National League Championship Series. I think it'll be very exciting. I like San Diego over Milwaukee in six games. I really think San Diego is the best balanced team in the National League. I've got them as a 5 in hitting and a 4.5 in pitching. I have them with the highest overall grade. And so I've got San Diego going to the World Series to meet Houston in the second consecutive All-Sun Belt World Series. What say you, Steve Callis?
Well, I say the Mets are in trouble because if you even saw the... I mean, game one was a classic game, actually. I don't know, they try and make it like the Bobby Thompson game, and it's not quite there, of course. But the problem that you find if you're a Mets fan, which you know I'm not, but if you're a Mets fan and you watch that game, and the Mets score six runs to take the lead, I think it was in the top of the eighth, to go up 7-4. And then they bring Edwin Diaz in early, and he gives up four runs.
Yeah.
And thankfully for the Mets, they score two more in the top of the ninth to win the game. But My goodness, he's imploded all year. Yep. Every once in a while, he looks like the Diaz of old. Never forget how stupid it was. The guy just, what, he jumped up and down on the mound, I think, and he missed a whole year.
Yeah.
And that's when I think you were the one who said, yeah, they should have that World Baseball Classic after the season,
yep.
not before the season.
Yep.
Because other people got injured. Nobody as bad as Diaz.
Right.
But Diaz missed a whole year, came back, been hot, been cold. He gives up a lot of big home runs. So I like the Brewers over them. And I'll even go with the Brewers over the Phillies. But I think the Dodgers, I think this is the year with the addition of Ohtani. I understand he's not pitching. But I think with the addition of Ohtani, and I understand what you say about their pitching, is true. It's almost like a Baltimore Orioles situation. Except I think this is Ohtani's first time in the playoffs, so I'm tired of hearing Ohtani better than Babe Ruth. We can talk about that another time. But let's see the guy in the playoffs. Let's see what he can do in the playoffs. I'm not saying he's ever going to match Babe Ruth hitting 15 home runs because he's not getting, and you know, they were on the World Series, of course, back then, but he may not get enough times to hit 15 home runs. But you have to see what he does. I love the 50-50 thing, but I have to say, and I think I've told you this story before, when Jose Canseco went 40-40, he was the first guy to do it. Incredible, right?
Right.
Mickey Mantle was still alive. Mickey Mantle was really a humble guy. People, they asked him, why, when you hit a home run, do you run around the bases with your head down? And Mantle actually said, well, I've already embarrassed the pitcher by hitting a home run. I don't want to embarrass him some more by, like, holding my head high as I run around the bases. Of course, that's been lost forever. Everybody's got to be a hot dog now. Whatever it is whatever it is. But Mantle, when he was still alive, a humble guy, he did say once in an interview, well, if I knew 40-40 was going to be a big thing, I could have done it. And first you might say, ah, what a braggart, but it's Mickey Mantle, who had incredible speed, even though he had a ton of injuries. It's just back then, and it were the Yankees. I think they followed the Earl Weaver theory before the Earl Weaver, you know, a bunt, a bloop, a walk, a bloop, and a three-run homer. That was the Yankees from the 1920s to, you know, the mid-1964. And so I think it's an incredible accomplishment. Did he have the greatest game ever when he had that great game? Yeah, he probably did, except it was on a Thursday night in the regular season, Rick. So,
yeah.
So what is a better game? Reggie Jackson, not even a Reggie Jackson fan. Reggie Jackson hitting three home runs off three different pitchers on three pitches in Game 6 of the World Series?
Yeah.
You can tell me what Ohtani did is the greatest single game ever, but it's like, to me, making one of the greatest catches ever in a Tuesday night game, which I think, by the way, Willie Mays did. You saw when Willie Mays died, the catch that he made in right center field, climbing the wall with Bobby, not Barry Bonds, but Bobby Bonds, an excellent player in his own right. They're both jumping up on a wall to catch it. Willie catches it, collides with Bonds, almost knocks himself out, falls to the ground, and the ball's still in his glove. I think that's the greatest catch I've ever seen. But I don't know. It's better than the 1954 catch, but it's not more important than the 1954 catch. You know what I'm saying, right?
Yeah.
So in any event, I don't want to digress too much, but in any event, I think the Padres are real good, but I'm going to pick the Dodgers because when you go down their lineup and you think, first of all, Mookie Betts and Freddie Freeman weren't very good last year.
Right.
And I don't think they're going to be bad this year.
Okay.
So you've got Betts and Freddie Freeman. Ohtani's Ohtani. I mean, 54 homers, 130 RBIs. And it's hard to say if he had a better year than Judge. As my son said, well, Dad, he's stealing bases. Is that a big thing? Well, you know, it kind of has come back a little bit. I won't say it's a big thing today, but, you know, he went 54-59 stolen bases. That's incredible. But you're putting Ohtani in. Is the pressure on him? I don't think this guy feels pressure. But you still have these other guys that they have. You know, Will Smith, 20 homers, 75 RBIs. Teoscar Hernandez, 33 homers, 99 RBIs. I've just given you five very tough hitters. And Max Muncy hasn't had the greatest year in the world, but he's Max Muncy. He's really good. And they all have playoff experience. Not successful. I mean, they did win the 1 year, but I think that lineup is even better than the Orioles lineup and better than the Yankees lineup. Over to the pitching, as you said, but they did get Jack Flaherty.
Yeah.
And he's 6-2 in his 10 starts. He saved them. Yamamoto came back. He's only 7-2 with a 3.00 ERA. But again, we're talking about guys with not a lot of innings. And this other guy who I actually looked him up, Landon Knack, who might be one of their starters because they do have a bunch of injuries. But, you know, you look at him, 3-5, 3.65 ERA, how good can he be? But you look at his starts, and in 10 of his 14 appearances this year, he gave up two or less earned runs in 10 of 14.
Okay.
These are big numbers in today's game. This isn't three or less. This is two or less. Those are ERA title type numbers to me. So I think with those three guys, their bullpen, you're right. I know what you're going to say about their bullpen. But I think with those five guys in the lineup, again, Ohtani, Betts, Freeman, Hernandez, Will Smith, and I'll even throw in Max Muncy because if he gets hot, he can be a streak hitter at times. I think they're going to go all the way. Dodgers, I got Dodgers and the Guardians in the World Series. So
wow.
That's kind of a... We didn't meet anything with each other.
Wow. Well, yeah. It shades of Bill Wamsgott in the 1920 World Series with the unassisted triple play. It was the Brooklyn Robins, of course, at the time. And by the way, I have another old historical reference to something you said there. On the whole thing of I would have done that if I knew that was a thing back then. I love how on this show we can always take it to these other great historical conversations we've had. Who is another guy in another sport that we talked about in the very same way? Oscar Robertson, who, of course, averaged the triple-double for a full season well before any sports writer out there invented the term triple-double.
And what's a triple-double?
Yeah.
You're right.
Yeah, like this whole thing of, like, you know, nobody back in the day was running around, you know, talking about these things like, hey, you know, the 50-50 club's big on social media, you know. Mickey Mantle at the time would have said, well, I'm not on social media. I choose not to have a Twitter account, you know. So, but back in the day, the way that these things went here, it was just, again, it was a different time. And it was just, you know, you can't really compare one thing to the other as far as, because now these are things that people are shooting for and actively trying to accomplish. So, all right. So, yeah, I had a feeling, just looking at the field here and how wide open it seems to be, I had a feeling we weren't going to land on either one of the same teams, much less both of them. And that turned out to be the case. I will tell you when looking at this here that I have this being a classic seven-game World Series. You know, Fox, again, they're going to take a beating like they did last year because it's, you know, all Sun Belt / Southwest World Series. You know, how's it going to play in Peoria? Well, not so well, probably. But you know what? To everybody out there, and again, we've talked about it, baseball's becoming a nichified silo kind of a thing, the way that so many things in society are. You know, for everybody that's not watching, let me just say, like the good little sports elitist that I am, you'll be the ones missing out because this is going to be a classic. Those of us that are going to be watching are going to love it. Seven-game series. Ends in Houston. Shades of 2019, it's going to be the road team. Or actually, wait a minute. Come to think of it, I think San Diego had the better record, so I guess they would be hosting it, even though they're a wild card. Regardless of where it is, San Diego wins their first World Series in seven games over Houston. I guess that does compare to 2019, the Washington Nationals winning their first World Series over Houston in seven games. History repeats itself. Again, I disagree with nothing you've said about Houston. As far as, like, they're not where they were the previous couple of times they made it to the World Series. I just look at the American League field and I shrug. I look at the National League field, I see it as being significantly deeper. And, again, I think there are four or five teams, if they made it to the World Series, I might take over Houston. I think it'll be quite an effort by them to extend the series as long as they will. But I see San Diego having been extended to six games by Milwaukee, being extended to five games by Philly, being extended to three games by Atlanta. I think it takes just enough steam out of them that it's going to come down to a one-game winner-take-all. In the end, San Diego wins their first World Series and joining a club in the 2020s here with the Denver Nuggets as first-time champions, the Florida Panthers as first-time champions, next up to be inducted. Congratulations to your 2024 San Diego Padres. That's how I see it going, and Steve, I would like to think that your prediction is going to end up warming the cockles of my heart as a long frustrated North Coast baseball fan. I'm getting the sense based on what you said about the Dodgers that it may not, but I want to hear what you have to say.
Well, Well, I think the Dodgers may not, because certainly the starters, I talked to you about the Dodgers, and the starters, I talked to you about the Guardians other than Bibi, are really guys who are coming in. You're counting on their freshness, which I'm all for. But I think when you go through the Dodger lineup versus Guardians pitchers versus the Guardian lineup against Dodger pitching, I just think the Dodgers are going to be too strong. So I have the Dodgers beating the Guardians in six. And also, since you brought up Bill Wamsgans, I just want to say, because I don't know how many people besides the two of us know, that the Bill Wamsgans triple play in the World Series of 1920, as you know, the Indians have won two, 1920 and 1948, right?
Yep.
In Game 5 of the World Series in 1920, when Bill Wamsgans made that triple play, it was played... I love this. As you know, it was not played in Municipal Stadium. It was played in League Park. And
yep.
Very few people, even though there was a League Park.
Yep.
I remember I had a friend, a sports writer for Newsday out in the island, wish I could remember his name. And he had to do a thing on Joe DiMaggio's 56-game hitting streak in 1941. And he had to do it. He had to, like, follow the streak. And I said, oh, I got a great one for you at the end. And I said, well, you know, the 57th game, where DiMaggio, by the way, was going to get a Heinz ketchup contract. I don't know if you knew that. If he hit 57 straight, Heinz 57. He lost $10,000, he said.
Wow.
But that was stopped in the 57th game when Ken Kelter made two great plays at third or something.
Yep.
Well, game 56, which was the last game of a streak, DiMaggio got the hit in League Field.
Yeah.
And this guy thought I was pulling his leg. I said, no. First of all, I never pulled his leg.
Yeah.
We had spent all of the A-Rod arbitration outdoors with each other, because the way you covered that back then, just as a quick aside, you just waited outside. You couldn't actually go to the arbitration. So you kind of get to know people when you're literally sitting around for 8 hours. But a real good guy, he did look it up, and he said, League Park, I had no idea. I never heard of it. Well, I think I told you, my son Johnny Callis was working in that area when he was a labor union organizer. He said, you ever hear of League Park? And I said, no. And he said, you got to come and see this. And when I went to Cleveland, I think I told you this, we snuck in, we climbed over a fence to sneak in, because that's exactly where it was in the 20s.
Yeah.
And the other famous thing that happened there is Babe Ruth hit his 500th home run there.
Yep.
And we're sitting in the lefty batter's box where Babe Ruth was. We're running around the bases before we got kicked out of the place. But I just think it's so fascinating how much we're losing history. I don't know if the history of Pete Rose, just trying to put this, a ribbon on this whole thing, but if the history of Pete Rose will be forgotten, I don't think it will be. And I frankly hope you're right, even though it's disgusting to, as I say, Ron Santo him. But I think he deserves it, and especially with the proliferation of gambling today. And I'll say it forever. The guy only been on his team to win, and he was penalized for 35 years. That should not be the penalty for betting on your team to win. I'm sorry, because you're going out to win. And if you're going out to lose, banned for 1,000 years, I'm good with that.
Yeah. No, I hear you on that, and I think that may very well end up being the case. League Park, yes, it's in the midst of a residential neighborhood, actually.
Yeah.
The last several decades, it's been, shall we say, a very high-crime neighborhood. I don't think it's quite what it was 100 years ago when they were playing there. But, you know, it's... And it's actually not too far. I don't remember back in the day when you would make it to Cleveland from time to time, if you ever made it down to the old Sports Talk Network studios down there at 55th and Marginal. But if you ever did, that's not too far from where League Park is. It's just a little ways south of there. I went over there to see it the one day. If you go there on a Saturday, they have that historical museum there that's on site. It's not a big one, but they've got some nice artifacts there that you can see. And it's all a restored kind of a deal. My good pal Ron Glasnap, years ago, my fellow FDH Lounge dignitary, he works for Bally Sports Ohio. And so there was some kind of media event when they reopened it. He got to take part. They had like a softball game to reopen the place, I think, when they finished the restoration. So he got to play in that softball game, and that was a big thrill for him. And
and I also know, according to Johnny, that what they have there now is they have every high school team in Cleveland gets to play one game there. Because it's beautiful. I mean, you've been there.
It is.
It's beautiful. And it's just so interesting to me. I understand it's, I think they stopped in the 40s there. but nobody, look, I'm one of them. I never heard of the place. And then when you hear what happened there, just like the only unassisted triple play in the history of the World Series, and Babe Ruth hit his 500th homer there, and Joe DiMaggio hit in his 56th game there, and then the next day they played at Municipal Stadium, much bigger capacity, as you know. I just find these things so fascinating, and they're really getting lost in time, and I hate that.
They are. Well, and I'll leave you with this here, an obscure note, that if it was to be the Tribe and the Dodgers in the World Series, this would mark the second consecutive year where the name Bill Wamsgantz would be mentioned out there, because you'd have some baseball historians mentioning it, citing that from 1920. Last year, it was actually mentioned in pop culture. I don't know if you watched, if you didn't get to see this, I highly recommend it, the HBO show Succession. Outstanding.
Oh, no, I'm very familiar because my son asked me about it. He wasn't sure, but he knew. You can tell me the story.
Oh, I remember it.
But when he told me the name, I said, well, yeah, that's,
Tom Wamsgantz, yes. Spoiler alert, the guy who becomes CEO in the final episode, sort of. I mean, he's a puppet for the foreign guy, but he ends up at least theoretically on top. The whole thing about, there was, and I don't know if the writers ever confirmed or denied this, but that basically he pulled the unassisted triple play on Kendall and Roman and Shiv by coming out on top, so that the writers were using his name as an Easter egg all along to tell you who it was going to be. You can believe that or not believe that, but that was a theory that was out there.
No, I think it was. I thought eventually someone did admit. I mean, come on, how could you come up with that name otherwise? Come on, you made that one up out of thin air?
Right.
I don't think so.
I mean, so to be at the point where not even a year and a half later, I mean, that was the first time Bill Wamsgantz's name had come up in any kind of thing. I mean, I live in Cleveland. You're always going to hear, in the Cleveland area, I should say, you're always going to hear it on the North Coast, from time to time here. But like nationally or internationally, that was rare to hear it come up. And then it's going to come up again if it's the Tribe and the Dodgers in the World Series. So we'll see if that plays out.
I hope it does.
Well, I hope so. And look, it'll be fun just if they make it that far. Again, I'm such a cynic about ownership and the fact that they never spend money. They just cynically count on catching lightning in a bottle. And it's possible. They did in 2016 when a bunch of guys were hurt. And now they made it there. And I will tell you, the one thing I will say about the baseball fans here that's great, I don't even remember the name of the guy. This is how quickly he fell off the mat. But there was some guy they promoted from the minor leagues, and just a no-name journeyman guy. Wasn't a prospect of any kind of note. He pitched the pennant-clinching game against Toronto. And there were some fans who happened to find online, because it was reported that he was getting married that offseason. There were fans that found his wedding registry, and these fans went in and basically bought everything on the wedding registry for him and his fiance. That's what happens when you're a hero in this town. I'm telling you, Steve.
I hear you.
That could, listen, we'll see if that happens for Lane Thomas or somebody else like that coming through the middle. You never know, but the one thing I do always know is that it is always a pleasure breaking down, whether it's baseball, football, anything else that we've ever done with you, Steve Callis. Thank you so much. I look forward to convening with you around the time of the World Series to take a look at that. I believe our great friend Ken Detweiler will be back in for the usual three-way preview here. So great to be with you, Steve. I really appreciate your time, buddy.
Yeah, same here, and that would be fantastic if Ken can come back for the World Series. I'd be looking forward to that.
Believe so, and so awesome to have you. Thank you, and thank you, everybody, for checking out FDH Lounge Mini Episode 1767.